I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
And I'm Susan Wilson. Casey Currents is KCUR's weekly magazine show. We use voices, stories, and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. Iconic funk and soul singer Marva Whitney was remembered at a funeral service this weekend at Memorial Missionary Baptist Church in southeast Kansas City. She died 2 weeks ago at the age of 68. That was just 6 years after the passing of James Brown, who catapulted her from KCK to national stardom. In recent years, Whitney had made a comeback, performing all over Europe and Japan, but not here in Kansas City. Sylvia has this remembrance of Soul Sister Number One.
Kansas City, Kansas native Marva Whitney became known in the 1960s for her soaring vocals and diva style. Her friend and advisor Dwayne Gillies says she was one of the first women to embody the authority of funk.
You knew there was a sense of urgency. She's going to grab you by the throat.
Unwind yourself.
No prisoners. With the kick and the drive of the bass, with the fine little funk guitar lines, the horn section hitting you, and then Marva sailing over the entire bit of it.
Whitney was tiny and glamorous, often sporting an afro and an attitude that matched her big voice. She may have made her name in funk, but the young Marva Ann Manning was from a church family. She told the Fish Fry's Chuck Haddocks in 2007 that her grandparents founded a church in Armourdale, and her mother was, and still is today, a gifted musician.
Mother seemed to be the anointed one. My grandmother anointed her fingers, and boy, she picked the right one. Well, as we got to be children, before my grandmother died, she says, those children are going to sing. Now, I had been singing in church since I was about three because that's what they do to keep the children busy. So mother, she started practicing with us. It took her about a year for us to understand harmony. And she almost gave up several times, but we didn't.
Marva and her six brothers, including a set of triplets and a set of twins, were the Manning Gospel Singers. They performed throughout the region and were even featured in Ebony magazine. Marva later joined the acclaimed Whitney Singers and married into the family.
When I was with the Whitney Singers, I was the high first soprano. And there was one time I hit a note. It must have been just right. And it was a glass on the table and it broke. And they all looked at me. They said, Marva, you broke the glass.
Whitney brought her effortlessly piercing soprano to popular music with the local band Tommy and the Derbies. They opened for many of the big names coming through Kansas City. And when James Brown played Memorial Hall in 1967, Whitney said she was asked to stay late. A member of the band told her to sing into a little recorder.
He said, stay right here. He went into Mr. Brown's room. Okay, and then he says, Mr. Brown would like to see you. Oh, was I afraid? I walked in there, and he says, hello. He's nice but very stern at when he's into his business. And he tells me, he says, You sound pretty good.
Marva Whitney's next 2 years with the James Brown Review sounded like a dream come true and a bit of a nightmare. She said he was a musical genius, a shrewd businessman, and a tyrant. But it was James Brown who had the idea behind her biggest solo hit.
It's my thing. I can do what I want to do.
The Isley Brothers was on James' back. I mean, everywhere he turned, he heard, it's your thing, do what you want to do. It was so hot, it was upsetting Mr. Brown. And he said, Whit? He said, "We got to do something about that." He said, "You're going to say it's your thing." He said, "Right. It's my thing." I said to myself, "How can I write 'it's my thing'?" And so I just kind of turned the words around, you know, and he had the music in his head. And he liked it. He liked it. So he had a friend in San Francisco. In those days, whatever Mr. Brown wanted, Mr. Brown was making so much money for the company, they dare not say no. He put that dub of that session on the plane. He said, "It'll be there in about 2 hours." He said, "And I want you to put it on air and let me know what kind of response do you get." They loved it. Phones start ringing off the hook. He said, "Mm-hmm, I thought so." He picks up the phone. He calls King Records and he says, "Stop the presses. Press Marvel Whitney's It's My Thing." And they stopped the presses. And you know they had plenty of good country and Western people that recorded for King. But when Mr. Brown says stop the presses and press what he said, that's exactly what happened.
Whitney had her own segment in the show and sang some legendary duets with James Brown at the Apollo Theater in Harlem and in Boston the night after the shooting of Martin Luther King Jr. She recorded 3 solo albums on his label. One of them, a record of jazz standards, has never been released. Now, Whitney and other band members say they never received their fair share of revenue from shows and record sales. She told Chuck Haddix that JB's leadership style was military all the way.
"I got a $75 fine for having a wrinkle in the back of my dress. Now, who was going to see that? I mean, if you weren't there at 6 o'clock, you got fined, and he would take your money that week. And it could be really hard. And you talk about the bus. I would be glad to ride the bus because to ride on his plane was not the best thing that you wanted to do because James never went to sleep until daybreak. And all of us had to sit there and talk with the boss. And now it's daybreak. He's ready to go to bed. But I've got to get up at 8 o'clock. To get myself ready, to make sure the clothes are ready, to make sure that we're ready in case whatever he wants, all of the entourage is behind him, right? I was happy to get on the bus."
Whitney said they were both tourists, and she tried her best to lay low.
"James act like a grandpa, too. You couldn't talk back. And I made the mistake of talking back."
That was just once, and she got sent home for 3 weeks with no pay. Whitney split with Brown in 1969, went on to found the Forte label in Kansas City with her second husband, Ellis Taylor. About Sugar Bear was one of her favorite songs of that era.
"Daddy's little girl got herself a man. Daddy don't know, he don't understand. He don't allow me no loving man. He's scared somebody's gonna change his family plan. Said Daddy's little girl got herself a man. And Daddy don't know, he don't understand. He don't allow me.
The Forte recordings have become high-dollar collector's items. They're about to be re-released by the Numero label this year. During the funk revival of the past decade, Whitney began performing again, mostly in Europe. That was until her manager played her some music by a band he wanted her to check out.
I said, "Ooh, where did you get that? That sounds like James' first band." I said, "And how did y'all get his James's voice to raise above this?" And he started laughing. I said, "What's funny?" He said, "That's not James Brown." I said, "You're lying." And then he told me, he said, "They're all Japanese, and they're the biggest band in Japan, and they're called Osaka Monorail."
Mother Whitney is here, baby. I'm back, baby. I'm on the right track. Hey!
In 2006, Whitney ended up recording her last album, I Am What I Am, with Osaka Monorail. That led to tours in Japan and Australia, but she told Chuck Haddix that she never felt appreciated here in Kansas City.
"I don't understand why I can't, or they won't ask me to play the boats when all over the world, Russia, every place all over the world, they're wanting me, but I'm at home and they don't know me and they don't want to respect what I expect from them.
You call me this, you call me that. I met you at the store. I know where it's at. I am, I am. Hey, hey, hey."
A year ago, Marva Whitney suffered a stroke while performing on stage in Australia. She retired from singing and died on December 22nd of complications from pneumonia. This was going to be a big year for Whitney. Besides the re-release of the Forte recordings, she had a book coming out called God, the Devil, and James Brown, Memoirs of a Funky Diva.
I'm brokenhearted about it. I really am.
That was Whitney's friend, Duane Gilley, whom she turned to because of the work he had done boosting the careers of local jazz icons, Pearl Thuston Brown and Myra Taylor. Gilley said the timing has been especially sad because she was about to get a new round of recognition.
But, I guess there's two ways to look at it. Somebody can pass and they're like, "Who was that? Who cares?" Or you can go out on a high where people were caring about you. People wanted something from you. They wanted to work with you. And to the very day she died, she was somebody. And she said, I may have come up poor. I may end up dying poor. But I've got soul about me."
Marva Whitney's funky wail lives on in endless remixes and samples by hip-hop DJs and rappers. But this weekend, she was remembered by her five surviving brothers, her mother, her two children, and the rest of her musical family here in Kansas City in the genre she never left behind, gospel.
"I'm tired. And I'm weary. But I must talk.
We're listening to Marva Whitney's recording of the gospel song Peace in the Valley with Osaka Monorail. This remembrance was produced with the help of Chuck Haddix, Laura Ziegler, and Michael Byers.
"Where the morning is bright and the lamb is as fair.
You're listening to Casey Currents.